Acts 22. So when we talked last week, we talked about how Paul was arrested. We come to verse 1, men and brethren, and he's wanting to talk to them. And he speaks to them in the Hebrew tongue, men and brethren, fathers, hear ye my defense, which I make now unto you. And when they heard that he spoke in the Hebrew tongue to them, they kept the more silence. He saith, I am verily a man, which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia. So he's established his citizenship in saying that, not specifically, but it's a hint. Yet brought up in this city, he's in Jerusalem, at the feet of Gamaliel. Now, this is a highly regarded teacher and taught according to the perfect manner. And when I think of the perfect manner, that's very rigid, very, very high requirements, high standards. When you memorize Bible verses, we might sometimes misquote a Bible verse because we're just kind of remembering the main points. No, you had to get everything exactly right. You had to pronounce it, the intonation and the punctuation, the inference, all of that has to be exact because we're trying to duplicate the information, the Jewish law. And so that's what he's talking about, learning at the feet of Gamaliel. And it had to be exact. When we teach something or when we learn something, they used to say, I don't know, they still say it so much anymore, but when we hear something, we only gain and learn 70% of what we've been taught. Okay, which once we get down the line, that's trouble, isn't it? Because if I learn 70% and I teach you, you learn 70% of 70%, and you teach somebody else, they learn 70% of the 70% of 70%. And so every time we're losing a portion of that understanding. Do you feel like that's happened in our country? Because we're not as rigid. And I can remember, and all of you can too, I'm sure, in school having to memorize things like the preamble and the Gettysburg Address, and you had to learn it word for word. And that's why it's so important to me when it comes to Bible memorization that we learn it word for word. Remember, I mentioned the other day, Ben said there was somebody handing out Bibles, a different version of the Bible, but he said, but when he quoted the Bible, it was King James Bible. And because that's what we grew up on, that's what we know. And that's why I think it's a terrible thing to change at this point. But anyway, after the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and I was zealous toward God, as ye all are this day. Guys, I'm like you. I was doing exactly what you were doing, Paul says. And I persecuted this way. Remember, when we're talking about the church or Christianity, he uses that term, this way. I persecuted this way unto the death. Now, is there any more severe punishment than that? Binding and delivering into prison, both men and women. So I wasn't playing favorites. I was completely sold out. As you are in your mind, I was a zealot. As also the high priest doth bear me witness, and all the estate of the elders, from them I received the letters, or warrants as we would call them, unto the brethren, and I went to Damascus to bring them which were there bound to Jerusalem for to be punished. Now, think about that. Have you ever seen when somebody gets arrested and they say, we're not going to handcuff you, but just, you're under arrest, but just come on. You ever seen that happen? Or they say, well, just put your hand, we'll just cuff you in front, right? So we're giving a little bit, not behind the back, right? So we're giving a little bit of courtesy. Paul says, no courtesy. I don't care if it's a man or a woman, a boy or a girl, young or old. If they were Christians, I bound them up and brought them for trial to be punished. Verse 6, it came to pass that as I made my journey and was come nigh to Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light round about me. Now, we've gone through this before, and we know the testimony, but it's important, again, as we're walking to Damascus, here the sun is where? At noon, generally, right? Up in the air, above us. But this is a bright light in his face. Suddenly there shone from heaven a great light round about me. I fell to the ground. So, again, it's a shocking experience. And I heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And I answered, Who art thou, Lord? And he said unto me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom thou persecutest. And they that were with me saw indeed the light and were afraid. But they heard not the voice of him that spake to me. So they heard the rumble or the thunder, but Paul distinguished words, a voice. And I said, What shall I do, Lord? And he said to and the Lord said to me, verse 10, Arise, go into Damascus. There it shall be told thee of all things which are appointed for thee to do. When I could not see for the glory of that light, being led by the hand of them that were with me, I came to Damascus. Verse 12, And one, Ananias, a devout man, according to the law, having a good report of all the Jews which dwelt there, came to me and stood and said to me, Brother Saul, receive thy sight. In the same hour I looked upon him. And he said, The God of our fathers has chosen thee, that thou shouldest know his will and see that just one, and shouldest hear the voice of his mouth. So, do we know the difference between a disciple and an apostle? A disciple is a student. An apostle is one who is called into the ministry in a specific title as an apostle by Jesus physically in his presence himself. So he named the 12 and he called them apostles. There was another one, there were others that were with them, but they were not appointed apostles, right? Then Judas died of suicide and they chose another. So they had 12 again. But now Paul is called into the ministry in the bodily presence of Jesus. Jesus met him on the road to Damascus and called him into the ministry, which makes Paul self-identified later as an apostle. It's important for us because people are going around calling themselves apostles today. Such is not the case. This is a biblical term with a high, it's a high appointment, not something we just take on as a title. And Ananias said that you should see that just one. Why? Because Paul hadn't been there. He wasn't in that circle in Jesus' ministry. And hear the voice of his mouth and know his will. So it's very, very intimate, very connected with God as the Lord pulls him into the ministry. Verse 15, thou shalt be his witness to all men of what thou hast seen and heard. And now, why tarriest thou? Arise, be baptized, wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. So Paul, in his effort to destroy the church and everything of that way, is on his way to Damascus. God does not change his direction. He continues to Damascus, but he changes his purpose. He changes his mindset. He changes his spirit. And when Paul gets there, describe to me, if you will, give me a term to say Paul's condition when he arrived in Damascus. What's that? Blind? Okay, he was blind. What? Okay, disabled. Scared, confused. Okay, astounded. I would say that when Paul got to Damascus, he was, I think confused is a good term for it, and he was afraid. He was humbled, wasn't he? He had absolutely no idea what happens next. How many of us have been there in our lives? Right, we've done, and now what? Like Paul doesn't have direct, what does that mean? That God chose me to know his will, to see him in his bodily presence, and to hear his voice. But now what? To be witnesses to them of all the things which I've seen and heard. What does that mean? And so Paul's really just, he's at the bottom. And his whole life, look, this is a pivotal point. It's everything changes from here. Can you point to a place in your life, in your history, and say that's where it all changed? Was it at conversion when you trusted Christ as your Savior? Was it after conversion and you decided, hey, I'm actually going to get serious about my faith? Was it maybe a job loss or a financial crisis or a financial blessing or some health situation or a relationship? But there are points in our lives, some would say, well, when I had my child, that just changed everything. And I've seen people that didn't grow up until they had a child. And then all of a sudden, they realized, you know, there's something to this whole thing. And so there are points in our lives, maybe we could point back and say, that's where everything changed. And Paul definitely could look back here, and that's the testimony he gives. You know, there's a crowd of people, authorities. He's, you know, basically being arrested, and he could say anything. He says, let me talk to him. Okay, talk to him. Maybe this is your only shot. What are you going to talk about? What are you going to tell people? Think about that in our lives. How many people do we meet that we'll never probably meet again? And what do we spend that time talking about? Do we talk about sports or races or politics? What's the most important? We've got that one moment. Right? What do we talk about? And Paul didn't just say, you know, Jesus died for your sins. He didn't do that. He said, this is what happened to me. I can tell you what I've been through. He said, look, I was like you. I was in your shoes. I was probably more than you are. I was more zealous than you are. I was totally brainwashed. But I was on my way to fulfill my duties as, you know, getting warrants from y'all. And I had an experience. And it was Jesus. And, you know, what he doesn't say here is 3 days. For 3 days, he wondered, what does this mean? What happens next? On his journey, I couldn't even walk. They had to lead me because I couldn't see. And this is his testimony. In that one opportunity he has to talk to them, what's he going to talk about? I was like you. I met Jesus, and I was put into this. My life since that point was on purpose by God's design. Can we say that? God has orchestrated my life, and I have submitted to his will. Verse 17, it came to pass when I was come again to Jerusalem, even while I prayed in the temple, I was in a trance. And, you know, so what would we call that? Verse, a vision, right? I was in a trance. In other words, he wasn't asleep, but he was, we might say, meditating. We go to the book of Revelation. There's John worshiping on the Sabbath day, on the Lord's day, he says. And I was in prayer and worship with God, and I had a vision. The book of Revelation is that vision. Now, Paul says, I was in a trance. Peter, on the top of Simon the Tanner's house in Joppa, same thing, right? In a trance. Well, we say trance, I think, because of modern entertainment, we think of, Scooby-Doo or something like that. But he's meditating. He's completely oblivious to everything around him. and he's in a spiritual connection with God and hearing his voice and seeing God in a vision. Okay, so being oblivious to everything around us. Verse 18, and saw him saying to me, make haste, get thee quickly out of Jerusalem, for they will not receive thy testimony concerning me. God told me not to preach here. God told me I needed to leave. God told me it was a waste of my time. Has God ever told you it was a waste of your time? On anything, like you pray about it, you go, Lord, what do you want me to do? And God says, it's a waste of your time. Don't even bother. Because it's just going to be a waste of time. So God told me to get out. Verse 19, I said, Lord, they know that I am imprisoned and beat in every synagogue, them that believe on thee. When the blood of thy martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by, consenting to his death, and kept the raiment of them that slew him. God, they know me. My testimony will connect with them. Surely I can be a better influence on them. Anybody ever argue with God? This is Paul arguing with God. God says, get out. It's a waste of your time. Oh, but God, they know me. God, I have a connection. I have things in common with them. They don't have in common with anybody else. I'm the best person for the job, God. You got to send me in. God says, Paul, it's a waste of time. They're not going to listen. It's interesting. Think about Jeremiah. What did God tell Jeremiah? He said, preach. They're not going to listen, but preach anyway. Now he tells Paul, don't even preach. You might as well just go because they're not going to listen. God says, verse 21, depart, for I will send thee far hence to the Gentiles. God says, Paul, you're focused on the wrong group. I design you for other people, not these people. I've got Peter. I've got the apostles around here. I pulled you in the ministry for a specific job. You're wanting to do this job, but that's not the job you're called to. How many of you ever knew somebody like that? They'd be happy doing everybody else's job, but wouldn't do their own. Like, just stay in your lane, do your job. I got other people to do that job. You do your job. But Paul won't hear it. Verse 22, they gave him audience to this word. They listened to what he had to say. And then they said, away with this fellow. Away with such a fellow from the earth. Verse 22. It is not fit that he should live. That's severe. You're preaching so bad, we'll kill you. That's not what they said. They don't want to hear it. They're completely opposed to it. On the way here this morning, Jay was asking, he was reading the Bible. He said, did they really persecute Christians? And I said, yeah. Why? I know, it's a great question, isn't it? Why would anybody be against a group of people who only want them to know the love of God and to be eternally in his presence? To have the love and the peace and the joy and the forgiveness and the hope that God provides. Why would anybody be against Christians? But it's a matter of jealousy. It's a matter of power and control. And that's really what it boils down to, isn't it? And they had built up such hatred in their hearts toward Christianity that you couldn't convince them that they were in blind hate. And we are witnessing it today, aren't we? We're witnessing today all around us people who have such blind hate that they don't listen to reason and logic and they won't weigh the facts and truth. You're not going to change their mind. I've known people in the ministry, when it came to certain doctrines of the Bible, and I had a deacon come to me one time, my deacon, and he said, Pastor, you know, you lay that out in a very reasonable way and very persuasive. But you're never going to change my mind. Guys, I don't know what to say to that. Hard-headed. And to take the Bible and just open it up and pull it all out and say, but you're not going to change my mind. We have got to be open-minded, not so open-minded that we lose sense and reason, but to be able to hear and weigh the evidence. You know, I had somebody the other day talking about being on jury duty. And I always go back to the same principle. If you were on trial, would you want somebody like you on that jury that could hear the evidence and weigh it and say whether the prosecution proved their case? That's what it's about. It's really, is it about the defendant being guilty? Well, it's about the prosecutor proving his case. Doesn't prove his case. That's the standard. And so you can go in and say, well, I don't like that guy. Doesn't matter. He's not really, he's the one on trial, but he's really not the one you're evaluating. You're evaluating the case. They're not going to hear it. He's not fit that he should live. Excuse me. Verse 23, as they cried out, they cast off their clothes and threw dust in the air. A tantrum. These are grown people. Not a three-year-old, right? I mean, a complete fit. Verse 24. The chief captain commanded him be brought into the castle and bade that he should be examined by scourging. What does that mean? What is scourging? Beaten. We're going to get the truth out of you. Yeah. The Roman scourge, I mean, you're talking about what all growing up I've heard referred to as the cat of nine tails. And it's got the leather tails on it, and it could have glass or metal or rocks. And they whip you with that, and when they hit you with it, when it pulls back, it draws skin and flesh with it. So what are we going to do? We're going to make them say he did it. Right? Eventually, you get beaten enough, and you just go, okay, quit. What's it going to take to stop? You're going to have to confess? Okay, I confess. And so they're going to beat Paul, tear his flesh, and get him to admit to whatever they want him to admit to. Verse 25, as they bound him with the thongs, Paul said to the centurion that stood by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned? Right, I'm innocent till proven guilty. That's one that we have a lot of trouble with, isn't it? Have a lot of trouble. A friend of mine was arrested this week. Guilty till proven innocent. And the charge laid against him immediately. Oh, my. And then you read, you know, the more of the charges, and it begins to become clear what the story really is. And I have to admit, on the surface, on the face of it, I was shocked and appalled and angry and, you know, what's that? Hurt. I mean, heartbroken, really, that he would do such a thing. As you begin to read the story, it's not really exactly what they said it was. So, and I'm not saying that because he's my friend, and we're not close friends. Yeah, but that's exactly the thing we got. You know, are we that way? Are they guilty until proven innocent? Or are they innocent until proven guilty? And so Paul says, I'm uncondemned. You're going to whip me? I'm a Roman. Now, what if he hadn't been a Roman? They'd have whipped him. Verse Verse 26, when the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, take heed what thou doest. This man is a Roman. The chief captain came, said to him, tell me, art thou a Roman? He said, yeah. The chief captain answered with a great sum, obtained I this freedom. He said, you know what it cost me to become a Roman citizen? Paul said, I was born free. What a privilege we have, huh? You look around the world and look around our country and see those that have paid the price. I was watching something the other day. I think it was in Tennessee, their house, state house. And the guy had immigrated from India and had been elected to office. And he was admonishing a young man who was born here. And he said, you know, you talk about freedom, but you don't understand what it costs like I do. You've taken it for granted. And you've got great privilege, but you want to say that you're oppressed. He said, no, you don't understand oppression. We have got to stop this political charade that continues in our country. And the longer we're quiet, the louder they're going to get. Paul said, I was born free. I was free born. What a privilege. Verse 29, straightway they departed from him which should have examined him. The chief captain also was afraid after he knew that he was a Roman, because he had simply bound him. Just that made him fear. On the morrow, because he would have known the certainty wherefore he was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands and commanded the chief priests and all their council to appear and brought Paul down to set him before them. He said, I'll tell you what, we got to get to the bottom of this. And so I want all these elders, we're going to put them on trial. We're going to get to the bottom. We're going to find out what the truth is. Now, what were they doing? They were trying to stop a riot in the street. But in their effort to stop the riot, they fear that they may have brought trouble on themselves. And that's what the captain is referring to here. All right? Anything else? Questions, comments, criticisms? You want to stretch it out another 10 minutes? Let's take a break.